This podcast is featured on the Gun Rights Radio Network, podcasting freedom.
The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T here. The new year is upon us. We have survived the zombie apocalypse and the end of the world as we know it. We've made our New Year's resolutions, and now it's time to talk about guns. Welcome to episode 9. Our last episode was pretty heavy duty. Of course it was. Under the circumstances, it kind of had to be. I told you at the beginning of that episode that I'm going to celebrate life for as long as I have it. Part of that is enjoying a hobby that you really like. In this case, that hobby is called reloading. Since some of you have seen my videos, you know I'm what we call a reloader or a hand loader. That means I make my own ammunition. This is not hard to do at all. And there are actually quite a few benefits to doing this. First and chief benefit is, well, doggone it, it's your right. This is not a mommy may I sort of thing, at least not here in the United States. Some countries it is, but thank goodness not here. You don't need a permission slip to do any of this. No, it's a right, not a privilege. Think of it as, yet another aspect of our Second Amendment rights. If you can, you ought to consider exercising this aspect too. Second, you can save a whole lot of money per round depending on the cartridge you're shooting. I'll give you an example. I've been putting in some quality time with the 44 mag lever gun, as you may have heard me describe. Got a loading that uses a 200 grain cast bullet. This rifle's all sorts of fun to shoot. Gotta tell you, I love it. Well, maybe that's why I'm doing it so much. I finally have a good use for all those 200 grain cast bullets that I'd done up a couple of years ago. With the appropriate charge of Alliant 2400 powder, the rifle shoots these things dead on. I only wish I were up to the rifle's abilities. Well, but that's why we go to the range, right? Practice and get better. However, as a lot of you know, 44 Magnum ammunition isn't exactly the least expensive ammo in the world to buy. To practice as much as necessary, you know, shooting 2 minutes of angle with that lever gun, if you want to do that, you need to go through a whole lot of ammo if you want to be able to shoot like with that kind of precision. 2 minutes of angle with a lever gun is pretty darn good. Now, I remind you, this is January 2013. 44 Magnum ammunition, as of now, costs anywhere between, 30 and 50 bucks per box of 50 rounds? I like to shoot at least one box a week. I'd do more if time allowed, but, life happens. So I can only afford one time a week, time-wise. So even at the low-end price of 30 bucks, that's about $120 a month. Or since there are 52 weeks in a year, that's about $1,560 per year. That's $1,560. Do the math. Now, let's suppose I shoot, twice a week. I do plan on doing that, by the way. What happens then? Well, we're talking over $3,000 every year. That's just for ammo. That doesn't account for range fees or anything else. Clearly, it'd be kind of nice to reduce that ammo cost some, don't you think? That's where hand loading or reloading comes in. That $30 box of 44 Magnum ammo, I can make that same box for $7? That's less than a quarter of what it costs to buy. 7 times 4 is 28. That's less than a quarter of that $30. That's the low end. Now, those of you who have watched my reloading videos, you already know I also make and shoot a lot of 38 Special, too. To buy a box of 38 Special, that'd cost about, 17 bucks for a box of 50. At least that's what we charge at the shop. I make that same box for less than 3 bucks. Do I have your attention yet? and my ammo is arguably better. I've compared my own rounds to some factory MagTech 240 grainers. This is 44 Magnum. MagTech is good ammo, no question. We sell lots of it. It shoots really well. with that ammo, I get, I don't know, maybe an inch just under at 25 yards. That's not bad for a 44 Magnum lever gun. Matter of fact, that's actually pretty good. To shoot 3 or 4 minutes of angle with a lever gun is about what you would expect. You're easily in the kill zone of any deer or hog out there in the woods. Now, let's contrast that with the rounds that I make. If the shooter, that's me, does his part, I get a single ragged hole at that same distance instead of an inch spread. I get one hole. One hole, four rounds. And I've done that more than once. I haven't tried it in a 100-yard range yet because I don't have one available, unfortunately. But you know what? Given these results, my lever-action 44 Magnum rifle might just be minute of angle with these rounds. There's a fellow on the AmmoSmith.com forums called 357 Shooter. He does something similar with his 357 Magnum lever gun. Oh, he does it all the time. I hate him. And yes, he reloads too. Yep, that's right. Our ammo's both cheaper and better. Now wait. I know what you're thinking. How can that be? How could little old me, some San Francisco liberal hippie boy, or 357 shooters, some country boy in the middle of Georgia, how could we somehow outdo the big ammo companies? Don't they have experts doing this? Well, sure they do. Of course they got expertise. Their people know more about ammunition and ballistics than either one of us will ever know in, I don't know, 12 lifetimes. I assure you, their level of expertise is not the issue. So how is it possible my ammo turns out both cheaper and better? How can that be? The issue is one of production on an industrial scale. You see, their ammo needs to work well in every last firearm out there that's chambered for that cartridge. It's also got to be pretty general purpose. Again, because they don't know whether it's going into, I don't know, a Smith & Wesson Model 29, a Ruger Redhawk, a Desert Eagle, a Rossi or Marlin rifle and 44 mag, a Ruger 44 carbine, and so on, etc. ad nauseum. When you're making ammo that must work in every 44 Magnum firearm known to mankind, you can't avoid it. You have to make a few compromises. It's like those off-the-rack suits or dresses. They work great, but nothing's going to beat tailor-made specifically to your body, your needs. Well, that's what we're doing here. Our gun, our needs. I can tailor-make ammo that is optimized for my specific gun and my specific purpose. Say I want a lighter load to introduce a small-framed lady to lever guns. No problem, I can make that. Say I want a higher velocity load that, you know, something higher, something faster than general purpose factory rounds can give me. No problem, I can make that too. Okay, now, say I want a super duper heavy load for taking down that 1,000-pound grizzly or polar bear. Once again, no problem. Gee, there's a pattern here. I just use a fairly hard cast 300 grain or, I don't know, maybe slightly heavier bullet. Or one of the new modern super bullets from Hornady, Spear, Barnes, whomever. The big ammo companies just don't have the provisions to make specialized boutique ammo like that. Reloading our own gives us that flexibility. And on a budget. There's another benefit, too, a third benefit. It's January 2013. Anyone trying to buy ammo? Any of you all trying to buy any rounds of ammo? Yeah, I guess you all found out, so is everyone else. Case in point, I just got back from a gun show today. You know that Russian 223 ammunition? Yeah, the cheap steel stuff? It goes by a few brand names, Wolf, Tool Ammo, Ulyanovsk, God, I hope I said that right, Brown, Silver, Bear, Golden Tiger, all those names, and so on. All that stuff from Mother Russia, mwahaha. 5 months ago, you know what that stuff costs? 20 cents a round. Guess what it is now? At that gun show, 80 cents a round. It quadrupled in price. And people are actually paying that. finding any affordable American military surplus, brass-cased ammunition, or anything else that's brass-cased and made to American specs, sure, that's near to impossible. Well, at least affordably. Y'all know about the military surplus M855 steel penetrator that used to go for, what, was it 45 cents a round? How about the XM193, the leg core that went for 40 cents a round? Forget it. You can't even find it now. Nobody's got it in stock at any price. It simply ain't there. Yes, folks, there's another big rush on ammunition. Y'all remember the great ammo rush of 2009? Well, this is the great ammo rush of 2013, especially anything related to certain semi-automatic, quote-unquote, tactical rifles, AR-15s, Mini-14s, any of that tactic cool stuff. People are out buying up everything they can while they can. How come? Same reason as 4 years ago, folks. Our elected officials are talking seriously about gun bans again. We talked enough about that last time, that very serious episode, that deadly serious episode. We were talking about that then. So this time, we're going to take a different turn. We're going to tell you how to mitigate that supply problem that we're now in the middle of. Yes, there is a way. Hand-loading your own ammo pretty much alleviates that problem. You always assure yourself a supply. I know this from experience. In 2009, I was one of the ones that got caught, too. Couldn't find affordable .357 Magnum to save my life. And I said, never again. You want to talk challenges? Here's one for you. Finding affordable .44 Magnum ammo is always a challenge, even in the best of times. But try it right now. Good luck. But I can make my own, so, as Crocodile Dundee said, no worries. When we come back from a station ID break, we'll go into more on some of the details.
This is Alex Haddix, host of the Practical Defense Podcast and member of the Gun Rights Radio Network. My latest manual, How to Write Range Safety Standard Operating Procedures, just became available. This detailed guide steps the reader through nearly every aspect of writing a shooting range SOP. This is a must-have reference for gun clubs, range owners, RSOs, and especially CRSOs. It's available now in Kindle, Nook, and iBook formats.
Okay, we're back. First, let's do a little bit of terminology. Oh, by the way, for those of you just joining us, we're talking about reloading or hand-loading our own ammunition. Okay, terminology. You've heard me use two terms. Hand loading and reloading. They're almost synonymous. Hand loading is the slightly more general term because it includes cases, brass cases that have never been used even once. Reloading means something a little more specific. You're working with cases that have been used at least once. For example, the brass cases you keep after you fire off the box of ammo you got at your local sporting goods store or wherever else. Most people, including myself, we do use this, what we call once-fired brass, the vast majority of the time. So most hand-loading is also rightly called reloading. Therefore, that's the term we'll generally use here, reloading. Ammunition itself, well, that comes in various forms. You got the muzzleloader type, which is basically the original form of hand-loading. And you got the later development, which is called a cartridge. When you pick up around a 9mm, 38 Special, 45 Colt, whatever, you're holding a cartridge. When you look at your box of ammo, it typically says, 50 or 20 or 25 cartridges. You notice that word? It's also known as a round, like 50 rounds. You know, as in I fired off three rounds at that bowling pin down the range. Nothing new. You've seen these all the time. You fire them all the time. Shotgun ammunition also comes in the form of these cartridges, too, just much bigger if they're 12 or 20 gauge. Now, since we're talking about reloading ammunition, I do need to make a few assumptions here. I'm assuming you know what a gun is. You've fired one. That you know what ammunition is. And you know the basic operation of how guns generally work. Certainly the one that you own or that you use most of the time if you rent or borrow one. You got a firing pin. You pull the trigger. The firing pin hits the primer, lights the powder, sends the bullet downrange with a loud bang. I assume you know all about all this. If you don't, if you're new to guns, well, this particular podcast episode may be a bit of an advanced topic for you at this point. That's okay. if that describes you. There's nothing wrong with that. We all had to learn. Okay, nothing wrong with this. It's just about, you know, making sure you crawl before you walk. You know, that's all. I suggest, therefore, before you tackle reloading, you get to know your gun for maybe a year or two first. Spend some good quality time at the range with it. The more, the better. That'll make you ready for this. So, again, we assume you know about ammo, how guns work, how to operate them safely. The basic stuff. What I'm not going to assume, though, is that you know how ammo is made. It's kind of the point of this podcast now, isn't it? We're going to talk about that. Oh, I'm also going to strongly suggest, if you're thinking about reloading your own, you invest in at least two good reloading manuals. Read them a lot. I'm not kidding. First one I read was Richard Lee's book, Modern Reloading. Second one was, Lyman's Reloading Handbook. It's currently the 49th edition. I'll grab them here for a moment. There they are. Yeah. Modern Reloading, second edition by Richard Lee. And Lyman Reloading Handbook, trusted by reloaders for over a century, 49th edition. These are good books. Oh, and I just recently got Hornady's Handbook of Cartridge Reloading, 8th edition. Got it on sale since there's now a 9th edition. I can recommend all three of these books because they're all good books. Seriously, folks, a couple of good reloading manuals should be your first purchase and your first study. Before you do anything else, please do that. Now, just a quick reminder. All ammunition consists of four parts. The case, that's usually brass, the primer, the powder, and the bullet. You need all four to make ammo. Well, there are a couple of narrow, very specialized exceptions, like the blanks they use on TV, but those are the corner cases, definitely corner cases. General ammunition cartridges use all four of these components. Just understand that. Now, the cases are typically made out of brass because that's one of the best materials for the job. They also come in a mild steel if you've seen any of the Russian ammunition. You see that from stuff like also not just Russia, but Bulgaria, Serbia, even Hornady Steel Match. You see various brands of Wolf Tool Ammo. They all have steel cases. Now, both materials work, both brass and steel, and both are suitable for reloading. Brass will generally last longer. You'll get more uses out of it. When you pull the trigger, we all know this. The firing pin hits the primer, which lights everything off, makes the gun go bang. No primer, no bang. However, to paraphrase the old saying, there are primers and then there are primers. It's basically two structural types, Boxer and Berdan. You want the Boxer type. That's the one with the flash hole that supports the flash hole in the middle. The Berdan type has two holes on either side, and they're a royal pain in the keister to deal with. Seriously, don't bother with them. The Boxer type is the one that we use here in the Americas. The Berdan style is used over in Europe. Now, once you get your Boxer primers, there are four types of those Boxer primers. Small pistol, small rifle, and large rifle. Further, there are so-called Magnum versions of each of these. The reloading manuals that you're going to read, you are going to read them, right? Yes, nod your head, please. Those books will give you details on this. Did I mention to pick up a couple of good reloading manuals and read them? If not, please pick up a couple of good reloading manuals and read them. Seriously, please do that. I say it jokingly, but I'm not kidding. Reloading is not hard at all, just as long as you read that and follow the rules for doing it. As long as you do that and pay attention to what you're doing, it's perfectly safe. Now, there's a myriad of available powders as well. I'm not even going to try to tell you what you should choose. You've heard of the Holy Wars for Ford and Chevy and Dodge, or how about Macintosh versus Windows versus Linux? It's like that with powders, too. I will say that for 38 Special, I personally favor a powder called Bullseye. And for 45 Colt, I like a powder called Tight Group. My Magnum style loads, like for the 44 Magnum lever gun, those use a so-called Magnum handgun powder called Alliant 2400. Which one should you use? That's what those reloading manuals are for. Read them. Oh, did I mention that? That's going to be a running theme, by the way. There are also about as many styles of bullets as there are powders. There are basically two major types. There's jacketed, the copper-looking ones, and cast. There's technically a third type. They call it plated. They look just like jacketed bullets, and I treat them as such. What do I personally shoot? Nearly entirely cast bullets. Those low prices to make a box of 50 rounds that I told you about earlier? That's part of how I do that. But won't that get lead fouling all through your gun? Won't you spend hours scrubbing out all those lead deposits? That's what people will ask and suggest. Well, if you use the wrong bullet, the answer is, sure, yeah, you will. How do you avoid that? How do we get rid of that? How do we bypass all of that? Easy. Just use the correct bullet and the proper lubrication. All lead bullets, cast bullets need lubrication, and you'll be just fine. I don't get lead fouling. Seriously, not one bit. A few swipes with a cleaning brush and some Hobbs number 9, I got shiny bores. Ready to go again. Oh, by the way, jacketed versus cast, that's another holy war. Some people say jacketed or plated only, no cast. Others prefer cast bullets. Some of us go so far as to actually cast our own bullets. And if you've seen my reloading videos, you already know that I cast my own. I save so much money by doing this. Plus, I'm always assured of bullets. I've always got a bullet supply whenever I need to make a box or two of ammo. If I need some more bullets, well, it's easy. I just cast them up. How to cast your own and why you want to do it? Well, we'll save that for a future podcast session, but we'll get to it, I promise. The main topic here is reloading in general. So, now you know there are four components to all ammunition. The brass case, the primer, the powder, and the bullet. That's it. Cartridges are actually pretty simple. When we come back, we'll get into the basic equipment needed to get started actually doing this. Stay tuned!
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
Back on the radio again. I know that was bad. We just went over what ammunition's made of. No, not what little girls are made of. What ammunition's made of. Now we'll talk about the equipment needed to make that ammo. These steps apply pretty much to all handgun cases, including the 44 Magnum we're principally talking about here. Why 44 Magnum? Well, because I'm talking about the lever gun. I'm shooting the lever gun a lot. But it applies to every other round, too. That includes 38 Special, 454 Casull, 9mm, 40 Smith & Wesson, you name it. It includes it all. Now, the star of the show as far as equipment goes is something called a reloading press. It's a pretty simple, yeah, so you're right, maybe I should correct myself, relatively simple machine, depending on the type you have, that does a few things. First, it removes the spent primer from your brass case. This goes by two names, this step. They go by decapping and depriming. The cap term from that comes from the old percussion caps from the black powder days. Both terms, decapping and depriming, are used interchangeably. This, by the way, is why we like boxer-primed cases and why we don't like Berdan ones. Berdan is a pain. Boxer is easy. This first stage also resizes your fired case back to the proper dimensions. See, after you fire a case, the high pressure in there expands the walls, those brass walls out some. You got to size it back down. This is so that it will physically fit back into the gun. The press does this in conjunction with what's called a resizing and decapping die. Next, you flare your case mouth a little bit so you can seat the bullet later. Nowadays, that also typically goes along with dispensing the correct amount of powder into the case. This is what's called a powder through expander die. All this is done in the press as well. After that, you seat your bullet with what's called a seating die. And finally, you'll do what's called crimping the case mouth around the bullet. Depending on the type of round, you'll either do something called roll crimping or taper crimping. Guess what? Your round is done. The reloading manuals will go into all of these steps in much greater detail. Hint, hint. You'll find, by the way, what might look like a dizzying array of reloading presses out there. It sure looked like a dizzying array to me when I got started. Fortunately, I can distill this down to the three basic types: single stage, turret, and progressive. The easiest to learn how to use is the single stage. It's also the one that most of the super accurate, high precision distance shooters use. Why? Because it gives them the best precision with making their reloads. But of the three types, the single stage press is admittedly the slowest at ammo output. A progressive press, on the other hand, this is the other end of the spectrum, is the fastest at spitting out ammo. It just churns them out. However, you do sacrifice a little precision for that speed. Now, that's fine for handgun ammo. Maybe even also relatively close in hunting ammo for your 30-30. But for precision distance shooting, like say if you're shooting 1,000-plus yards, that's not going to give you the results you want. A turret press is kind of, I don't know, we'll say midway between a single stage and a progressive. I like to call it a semi-progressive. A semi-automatic press, if you will. Personally, I own all three types of presses, and I use them for different things. However, all ammo can be made with a single stage press, and that's how I learned. I recommend you do the same. This way, see, you learn what each step does and why. You also better learn what to look for when something goes, we'll say, not quite right. That can save you down the road. That fancy progressive press will still be there when you get some more experience. Now we get to which brand. Remember those holy wars we mentioned earlier? I think the only one that matches Mac versus Windows versus Linux is the reloading press brand name wars. Personally, I think it's hilarious because, well, we all know that there's no God but Richard Lee, and John Lee is his prophet. Kidding! I'm kidding, folks! It's a joke, okay? Dylan, folks, especially, put your pitchforks down. We already got past the end of the world. We can get past this, too, okay? Pitchforks down. It's a joke. Seriously, okay? All the major brands of presses are good. The real issue is how much money you want to spend and how many rounds you believe you need to be able to spit out per hour. Typically, we talk about numbers of rounds produced per hour. Whatever you do, I recommend that you do not drop a gigantic wad of cash right off the bat. Start slow. Learn what you're doing. You know, what all that info in your reloading manuals is telling you. So, we're back to which brand to use. You have your fans of all the major reloading companies. I happen to use gear from Lee Precision. Others use RCBS, Hornady, or Dillon Precision's gear. Again, they're all good. On some of the online gun forums, you'll see some rather strong and even a few extreme cases of brand loyalty. Take all that with a bit of a grain of salt and just remember, Ford, Chevy, Dodge. I'll give you my recommendation now. For just over $100, Lee Precision's so-called anniversary kit, it's a single-stage kit, is an excellent way to get started. Get that and a set of dies for the cartridge that you do the most of, and that's pretty much all you really need. People will talk about, well, I can make, you know, a gazillion rounds per hour on my fancy progressive press. Folks, this isn't a race, okay? Let's just dispel that right now. When you're making ammunition and working with gunpowder and explosive things called primers, this is not a race, and you don't need to impress anybody else. You need to learn how to make good ammunition for yourself. That's the key, and you need to learn how to do it safely. Just keep reminding yourself of that. Your reward will come when you fire your very own rounds. Believe me, you will feel very, very good, very satisfied this after you send some lead from your own handmade rounds downrange. That will be a very satisfying thing indeed. And best of all, you'll know exactly how to make more of those rounds. Anytime you need to, anytime you just want to. If you haven't yet, check out the instructional videos on reloading over on www.sanfranciscoliberalwithagun.com. Those are the ones that I made. Most of them are also on the YouTube channel SF Liberal. I would also recommend checking out, once again, I keep mentioning these folks, www.amosmith.com. Why? Because they're good. The folks there have a lot of experience, and they sure helped me. Reloading is learnable, folks. Don't be intimidated by what I'm telling you. Just follow the rules, and you'll be perfectly safe, and you'll be just fine. As my camera lady, Miss Bleeding Heart Conservative, who also reloads, put it, it's like needlepoint. You can do this. We'll take a break, and then we have a serious subject to talk about. See you in a moment.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership, gunrightsradio.com.
Okay, we're back. We just got through talking about rolling your own ammunition, also known as reloading or hand loading. Now I'm going to tell you my real reason why we went over all that. Remember I mentioned there's a big rush on ammo? All sorts of folks are panic buying whatever they can get their hands on. Well, this reminds me of something else. It reminds me of something that the now late Ted Kennedy said during the 1970s. Quote, no ammo, no guns. Close quote. It also reminds me of something called Assembly Bill 962 in California. This is a couple of years back. Its goal was to limit the availability of ammunition in California to the point, really, that all you could do practically with a gun was, and I'm going to quote the bill's major sponsor here, Kevin DeLeon, quote, pistol whip someone, close quote. That's all he wanted you to be able to do with your firearm, with your legally purchased firearm. No ammo, no guns, basically. Yeah, that's all some folks want you to be able to do in the face of danger. Maybe pistol whip the assailant. Here's the problem. What happens when that assailant is someone who's sworn to protect and serve the community? Kind of like what happened to a fellow named Julian Alexander in Los Angeles in 2009. Or Rodney King. For you California folks, Oscar Grant. How about the folks after Hurricane Katrina? Or so many others throughout this nation and the world? What then? Well, one fellow did find out. His name was Thomas Adams. Y'all remember we told a little story last month? Remember a little story? It's about an old grandpa and his grandson. It's called Sundown at Coffin Rock. If you haven't heard it, it's in the final part of episode 7 of this podcast. It's worth your checking out. Some of you who listened to that commented on that story last month. You told me it scared you, gave you the creeps. And, well, it should have. How often do we hear about such societies on our news media? You know, the People's Republic of China, North Korea, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, several nations in Europe, the ethnic cleansing episodes that have broken out over the last 100 years and apparently are still going on to some degree. Bosnia-Herzegovina, anyone? That story should have scared you. With this push to limit our Second Amendment liberties in the aftermath of that terrible school shooting last month, yeah, it really should scare you. There's an old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Those in power who would work to limit our liberties, they're always there. Always there, waiting for some tragedy to come along they can use to manipulate people into allowing an increase in government rule. At what expense? Our liberties. It happens over and over again throughout time, folks. Just look at history. You really think these repeated attempts to limit ammunition and firearms is about keeping the people safe? You really think so? Government will take care of it. The police will take care of it. Here's a different view for your consideration. Remember that little story that I mentioned earlier? The one that gave some people the creeps, some of you the creeps? Well, fortunately, there is more to that story. It concerns that fellow I just mentioned, Thomas Adams. Thomas is now 21. The scene is 6 years later. His grandpa's been dead now for about that long. He sits upon a cold stone. He's shivering a bit in the chilly pre-dawn air of some April morning. Flashlights turned off, resting beside him on the bare granite of Coffin Rock. Involuntarily, he strained his eyes in the gray non-light of the false dawn, trying to make out the shapes of the trees, the mountains across the river. Below, he could hear the chuckling of the water as it crossed the polished stones. How many times had he fished here, his grandfather beside him? He tried to shrug away the memories, but why else had he come here except to remember? Well, perhaps to escape the inevitable confrontation with his mother. She'd have to be told sooner or later. But Thomas infinitely preferred later. "Mom have been expelled from the university," he said aloud in a conversational tone. Some small night animal, startled by the sudden sound, scurried away to the right. "I know this means you won't get that upgrade to C3, and they'll probably turn you down for that surgery now. Gee, Mom, I'm sorry." Sounded so stupid. Why, she would ask. How? How could he explain that? The endless arguments, the whispered warnings, the subtle threats. Dennis had told him to expect this. Dennis had lost his parents back in the first purge back in 2004. His bitter hatred of the state's iron rule had failed to ruin him only because of his unique and accomplished abilities as an actor. Only with Thomas did he open up. Only with Thomas did he relate the things he had learned while in the youth re-education camp near Charleston. Thomas shuddered. It was his own fault, he knew. He should have kept his mouth shut like Dennis told him. All his friends had come and shaken his hand and pounded him on the back. "That's telling him, Adams," they said. But their voices were hushed and they glanced over their shoulders as they congratulated him. On later, when the volunteers of the Green Ribbon Squad kicked his ass all over the shower room, those same friends had stood by in nervous silence, their faces turned away, their eyes averted, their tremulous voices silent. He sighed. Could he blame him? He'd been afraid, too, when the squad walked up and surrounded him. If he could have taken back those proud words, he would have. Anyone is afraid when they can't fight back, he discovered. So they taught him a lesson, and he had expected it to end there. But then yesterday had come the call to Dr. Morton's office and the brief hearing that had ended his career at the university. "Thomas," Morton had intoned, "you owe everything to the state." Thomas snorted. The light was growing now. He could see the pale, rain-washed granite in the grayness as if it glowed, really. Coffin Rock, by the way, was now a knob, a raised promontory that jutted up from a wide, unbroken arm of the mountain's stony roots, its cover of soil pushed away. There were deep gouges scraped across the surface of the rock. This is where the backhoe had tried, vainly, to force the mountain to reveal its secrets. He was too old to cry now, but Thomas Adams closed his eyes tightly as he relived those moments that have forever changed his life. Those shouts and angry accusations as the agents found no secret arms cache still seemed to ring in his ears. They'd threatened him with arrest, and once he thought the government agent named Goodwin would actually strike him. At last, though, they accepted defeat, turned down the mountain, following the gashed trail of the backhoe as it rumbled ahead through the woods. At home, he'd found his mother and father standing, ashen-faced, in the doorway. "They took your grandpa," his father said in disbelief. "Just after you left, they'd put him in a van and took him." "But they said they wouldn't," Thomas had shouted. He ran across the yard to the old man's cottage. The door was standing open, and he wandered from room to room, calling for the grandfather he would never see again. It was his heart, they said. 2 days after they'd taken him, someone called and tersely announced that the old man had died in the indigent clinic a few hours after his arrest. "Sorry," the faceless face had muttered. Thomas had wept at the funeral, but it was only in later years that he had come to understand the greatest tragedy of that day. that the old man had died alone, knowing his own grandson had betrayed him. That grandson was Thomas Adams, and he was now too old to cry in the growing light of the cold mountain dawn. He did anyway. Thomas was certain that his father's decertification 6 months later was due to the debacle in the forest. As much as anyone did these days, they had, quote-unquote, owned their home, but the certification board would still have evicted them, except for the intervention of Cousin Lou, who worked for the state supervisor. As it was, they lost all privileges, and, well, when his father came down with pneumonia the next autumn, medical treatment was denied. He had died 3 days after the first anniversary of Grandpa's death. Thomas had been sure he would be turned down at the university. But once again, his cousin had intervened and a slot had, quote-unquote, opened for him. But now that's finished, he reflected. He would be unable to obtain any certification other than manual laborer. "Why didn't I keep my mouth shut?" he asked the morning stillness. In a tree behind him, a mockingbird began to sing its ageless song, and as if in answer, the forest began to twitter and chirp with the voices of other birds greeting the new day. No, what he had said had been the truth, and nothing could change that. The state was wrong. It was evil. It was unnatural for men to be slaves of their government, always skulking, always holding their tongues, lest they anger the state. But there is no state, Thomas considered. There are only evil men holding power over other men. And anyone who speaks out, who dares to challenge that power, is crushed. If only there was some way to fight back. Thomas shifted on the stone. He hanging his feet off the downhill side. His feet had almost touched the grass that day, but, well, now, although his legs were certainly longer, it was at least 10 inches to the scarred rock surface below. As he kicked his heels back and forth, he could almost hear his grandfather speaking to him from long ago. "One day America will come to her senses. Our men will need those guns, and they'll be ready. We cleaned them and sealed them up good. They'll last for years. Maybe it won't be in your lifetime, Thomas. Maybe one day you'll be sitting here with your son or grandson. Tell him about me, boy. Tell him about the way I said America used to be. You see the way this stone points?" the old man was saying. "You follow that line 100 feet. Thomas's heels were suddenly still. For many minutes he did not move, playing those words over and over in his mind. Follow that line. What hidden place in his brain had concealed those words all those years? How could the threats have failed to dislodge it? He stood upon shaky legs and climbed down from Coffin Rock. In his mind's eye, he could see the old man pointing, and he walked down the hill and through a clinging briar patch, counting off the paces. The round stone did seem solidly buried, but he scratched around near the base and found that the rock ended just an inch or so below the surface. "One man with a good bar can lift it," Grandfather had said. Thomas forced his fingers beneath the stone, and with all the strength of his 21-year-old body, he lifted. The stone came up, and he slid it off to one side. Cool air drifted up from the dark opening in the mountain. Thomas looked to the right, where the scars of the state's frustrations ended, only 15 or 20 feet away. They had been that close. He squatted and stared into the darkness, and he remembered his flashlight. In a moment, he was back with it, probing into the darkness with the yellow beam. There was a small patch of moisture just inside, but then the tunnel climbed upwards toward the ridge. On hands and knees, he entered. It was uncomfortably close for the first 20 feet or so, and then the cavern opened up around him. The men who had built this place, he saw, had taken a natural crevice in the granite rock, sealed it with masses of poured concrete, and then covered it with earth. The main chamber was bigger than the living room of a house, and they had left an opening up near the peak of the vaulted roof where fresh air and a faint filtered light entered. Wooden boxes and crates were stacked everywhere on concrete blocks up off the floor, stenciled with legends like Rifle Cal 30 M1, 9 mm Para, 1M193 Ball, 7.62 by 39 mm, and 5.56 mm. He pushed between them and crawled to the wall where he found cardboard boxes wrapped with plastic sheeting. They were imprinted with strange names like CCI, Olin, WW748, Bullseye, RL550 Bravo. He did not know what the crates and boxes contained, and he was afraid to break the seals. But near the center of the room, he found a plastic wrapped carton labeled, Open This First. With his penknife, he slit the heavy plastic wrapping. It contained books, he saw with some disappointment. But he studied the titles and found that they were manuals on weapons and how to repair them, how to clean them, how to fire them, and ammunition, how to store it, and how to reload it. Y'all remember we were talking about that before in this episode. And here was something unusual. A History of the United States. He lifted it from the carton and crawled back to the open air. Leaning against a stone, he tore open the heavy vinyl bag that enclosed the book and began to read at random, flipping the pages every few moments. On each page, something new met his eye, contradicting everything he had ever been taught. Freedom is not won, he learned, by proud words and declarations. He remembered a quotation taught at the university. Blood alone moves the wheels of history. An Italian dictator named Mussolini had said that. But now he read of a man named Patrick Henry who said, The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Mao was required reading at the university, too. And now he recalled that this man, called a hero by the state, had once said, Political power comes from the barrel of a gun. Freedom is never granted. It is won. Won by men who are willing to die, willing to lose everything so that others may have the greatest possession of all. Liberty. Mentally, he began to list those he could trust. Men who had been arrested for speaking out. Women whose husbands had been arrested and never returned. Friends who have been denied certification because of their father's military records. The countryside seethed with anger and frustration. These were people who longed to be free, but who had no means to resist. Until now. Thomas laid the book aside and then worked the stone back into position, carefully placing leaves and moss all around the base to hide any evidence that it had been disturbed. He tucked the book under his arm and started for home with the rays of the rising sun warming his back. He imagined his grandfather's touch in the heat, a forgiving touch. A long, hard struggle was coming, and he knew with a certainty that defied explanation that he would not live to see the day when America would once again be free. His blood, and that of many patriots and tyrants, would be spilled. But perhaps America's tree of liberty would live and flourish again. There is a long line stretching through the history of this world. A line of those who valued freedom more than their lives. Thomas Adams now took his place at the end of that column, as he determined that he would have liberty or death. He would be in good company. The first several times I read that to myself, I had trouble getting through it without a little emotion, getting a little emotional, folks. It is scary. As Susanna Hupp and others have said, the Second Amendment is not about duck hunting. It doesn't have a damn thing to do with hunting or sport. That was an invention that happened in the wake of the 1968 assassinations of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. The charged term assault weapon was an invention by Josh Sugarman of the so-called Violence Policy Center. It was formerly Handgun Control Incorporated. They changed their names. The end result, like you see in Chicago, Illinois, or New York City, or again, New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, or heck, Washington, D.C., is the inability of the populace to fight back. And we know what happens when the people cannot fight back. That, folks, is the actual intent behind the Second Amendment. We've got folks watching us, the government, police, so on. And now they want these drones flying overhead, watching us as much as they think will let them get away with. Well, I want to know something. Who's watching the watchers? I want to know. Who's watching them? Who's keeping them in check? What about our civil liberties? Huh? That's why the Second Amendment exists. It's there, just like with Thomas Adams, as our final protection against a government gone wrong. And to do that, we need not only private firearms ownership, but also ammunition to feed those firearms. Like Ted Kennedy said, no ammo, no guns. Now, remember that ammo shortage we're experiencing now. All this comes full circle finally, doesn't it? No ammo, no guns. That's why there's a rush on ammo now, because enough people have heard the antis say that before. No ammo, no guns. We've seen them try to implement it, like that California Assembly Bill 962. Oh, by the way, you know they're trying that again out there? They're working on it now as we speak. They've been working on it, and they're going to keep working on it. Then you're going to see it. Look out. Look out, Californians. Without ammo, what good are your guns? Without ammo, just how safe is that final protection from a government gone wrong? And that is why the right to reload remains a critical part of the right to keep and bear arms. Of all the valid reasons for learning how to reload your own, I believe that's the most important reason of them all. Think about that. This is Cowboy T signing off until next time. Well, until then, safe shooting, and thanks for listening.